Welcome everyone to this extra lovely event at the National Museum of Australia. So look, we're all here because I think of happy childhood memories, thoughts of laughter, of delight, and just a bit of magic. How did he do it? Norman Hetherington amused, inspired, and delighted generations of Australia. And with this collection and exhibition, that delight and inspiration continues. Norman Hetherington entertained troops during the Second World War and was a cartoonist at the Bulletin, but is best known as the creator of Mr. Squiggle, the puppet with a pencil for a nose, brought together his two loves, cartooning and puppetry, and the show became one of Australia's longest-running television programs. This is an extra special night tonight because we're lucky enough to meet members of Norman Hetherington's family. So let me do the introductions. And look, well done to the museum for grabbing this amazing collection and mounting this exhibition. So please welcome up to the stage now. And I know she's absolutely delighting in this role. And that is curator from the National Museum, Danielle Kesser. Up you come, Danielle. Norman Hetherington's daughter, Rebecca Hetherington. Up you come, Rebecca. And Rebecca's son and Norman's grandson, Thomas Hetherington Welsh. Up you come, Thomas. Now, Rebecca,
Yes.
the holder of all knowledge,
Oh, we'll see. We'll see.
what would your father, Norman, Normie, make of this exhibition?
I think he'd be, I mean, even the fact that people have turned up and are interested in hearing about his life, he would be really flattered and quite bewildered, I think. But he'd be so excited. He'd be so excited to see this all presented so beautifully that, yeah, he'd be very touched, but a bit embarrassed.
You describe him as just the nicest man you've ever, and I asked you off air, did he have any faults?
Well, I'm sure he had faults. He must have had faults, but as a performer and as a creative person, I don't see those faults because I think he worked really hard. He always came at things with 100% or 150% of commitment and excitement about what he was doing. So in a working sense, and he was really easy to work with and very friendly and warm to everyone he was working with, whatever their role was, and whatever contribution they were making, he valued that contribution. So I guess he must have had faults. Well, my mother would say he was a workaholic, and so
I don't know if you wanted to come in there, Thomas, and you're about 11 when he died.
I was.
So you had a good dollop of
Yeah, I did. I did. I did. I think I had, well, the Wonder Years for me and his Twilight, I suppose. I suppose from my perspective in terms of faults, he wasn't the most organized, would you say, Mum?
Oh, no, I think he was very
Well,
organized.
perhaps he had an order for himself that made sense to him.
In his defense, let me say, he actually was exceedingly organized, but once. Okay. There is actually order in that. And if you panned around and saw the entire studio, there was order everywhere. It's just after 70 years of continuously creating, it was just getting a bit, it was sort of getting a, you
Busting at
know,
the
bursting at the
seams. It
seams.
was. It was.
But there was order and organization. And let me tell you, honestly, a blink of an eye, he could locate anything on that workbench. And you see up the top there, plastic shapes, wooden shapes. That is everything he would just find and he would store it. And he would know what was in that box. So if he was making something, he'd almost not have to get the box down first. He'd go, oh yeah, there's that red tube that I got. That'll be a perfect nose. And he'd just bring it down straight away. So I think he was very organized and very organized in his approach to doing a puppet show. He had a list and it would have everything on it that he needed in terms of if a puppet might break a string, it was all there and he didn't leave before everything was packed and in the car. So I'm defending him.
Yeah. Actually, my husband saw these photos and I think he had shed envy. And he went, there's skyhooks. Like, he's got things organised. Like, yeah, I think he agrees with Rebecca.
Yep.
That,
yep.
I mean, it just looked like Aladdin's cave to me. It just looks so beautiful. Danielle, acquiring this collection, it was just a great get for the National Museum. How important is it as a piece of Australian cultural history?
It's so important in conveying who we are as Australians and helping to shape our national identity. Mr. Squiggle is so deeply woven into Australia's cultural memory. And then when you add Norman Hetherington's personal story and his life's work, it's been such a joy to welcome Mr. Squiggle and Norman to the museum.
There's so many things to love about Norman's story, but the fact that his parents, he went to the prestigious Fort Street High.
Fort Street Boys High back
Boys
then.
Boys High. Both prime ministers and many creatives. But his parents didn't blink an eye when he said he wanted...
They blinked an eye.
Well, he announced he was going to go to art school. Okay, and this is just after the Depression.
Just after the Depression. Yeah. So he's approaching or completing his intermediate certificate. And they would expect that, you know, he's going to go on and, yes, you know, he might be a bank manager or a solicitor or a... And he says, I want to leave and go to art school. And they were terrified. But fortunately, they actually showed some samples of his work to a couple of very successful artists that their family knew and said, he wants to go to art school. What do you think? And they said, I think he'll be okay. You should let him do that. So they said, okay. And I think that's incredible from their point of view.
I think so too.
Because, you know, they were humble, hardworking people that were excited about their son's future, and he took a left turn.
And then he actually went to work in advertising as well, didn't he? He went part-time, but then the war came and his talents, his artistic talents were quickly recognised. And
Yes, he enlisted in the infantry, but someone was organising a show for the troops and realised he, because of his cartooning and his illustrating, he could do lightning sketches. So they said, oh, will you come do something in this performance we're putting on? So that sealed his fate. And once they saw that he could do that, they said, oh, well, we're moving you across to Army Entertainments and you'll be entertaining the troops.
So the war experience and that, yeah, having to think quickly, having to perform. So it's, you know, a whole lot of his talents coming to the fore. And then he comes back from the war and gets a dream job as a cartoonist at the Bulletin.
From very early, sort of being a young teenager, he wanted to work at the Bulletin. To be a cartoonist at the Bulletin was his dream job. And he, even as a student, when he first went to art school, he sold his first cartoon when he was about 16 to the Bulletin. And he pursued that relationship. He kept selling cartoons to the Bulletin and to other publications, which you'll also see in the exhibition, all through his war years. And when he came out of the war, he went and visited the editor of the Bulletin and they offered him a job. I find that incredible. Where do you go from there? You've come out of the war and, you know, you're 24 and you've got your dream job. But it turned into much more because the Bulletin was such an alive, creative space, and they expected everyone to pursue all their other creative, you know,
but
interests.
A superb vantage point to critique modern Australian life as it was then. And, of course, Norman Lindsay was a great encourager, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was very senior at the Bulletin when Dad joined. And, of course, he was one of Dad's idols and so loved that contact. And Norman Lindsay was very, very encouraging and said, you know, you must find your own line. People must, when they open the magazine, they must immediately see that is a Norman Hetherington. They must be able to recognise your line. So he had sort of lots of experience that he shared, and also he took him under his wing to complete Dad's etching classes.
Danielle, how did the curatorial team shape the story around Mr. Squiggle and Norman's creative world?
It's a bit of a chronological story that we're telling. So we are doing a journey of discovery into Norman's creative world and looking at how these kind of milestone moments throughout his life, picking out some of those threads and showing how, you know, his wartime performances and his cartooning and his puppetry, all of these kind of converged towards the, you know, the ultimate creation of Mr. Squiggle there.
How did he pitch Mr. Squiggle, the puppet with a pencil for a nose?
Well, you know what? I think with enthusiasm. Okay. And he couldn't help himself but talk about, you know, with excitement about what he was doing. And so there he was doing his Nicky and Noodle show. And, of course, you know, over a cup of tea, he'd be telling people about this puppet he was doing. And so when Nicky and Noodle's contract was finishing, John Appleton, the head of ABC Young People's Programs, then said, you need to take 6 weeks off, get new backdrops, new scripts for Nicky and Noodle. We'll bring that back in 6 weeks, but something next Wednesday, why don't you bring in that puppet you were telling us about that could draw with a nose? So that's, you know, that's how he pitched it. Mm. It was just an enthusiastic chat. And, yeah, he came
and
in.
And the hard work came in. Then
yes, yes.
Was it an instant hit?
Yes, yes, it was. They were flooded with people sending in squiggles. And so that's why Nicky and Noodle never came back, because poor old Nicky and Noodle. Yeah. But that's the story of television, isn't it? That's showbiz.
They appeared on the ABC's first broadcast.
They were on the first night of ABC's broadcast. But, and 3 years later, they were
old news.
Old news. Mr. Squiggle had nudged them aside.
Yeah. Thomas, you're 25, so your generation didn't grow up with Mr. Squiggle.
No.
So how do you explain it to your friends? What kind of reaction do you get from your friends?
Well, yeah, it's funny because it was the show ended the same year I was born, and so I feel, when I was in primary school, I was the only kid who knew who Mr. Squiggle was, and I obviously thought Mr. Squiggle was really cool. Because he was my granddad. A lot of my friends, you know, especially, you know, now that I'm older and, working in puppetry and working in theatre and shows and with artistic people, everyone it's funny, they have some connection without having some connection. I was saying to a friend of mine at uni, she, when I said, oh, my grandfather's Mr. Squiggle, and she was like, what? Mr. Squiggle? And I was like, yeah. You know who Mr. Squiggle is? She was like, yeah, that was the game that my mum always played with me in the car on road trips. And she would do a little squiggle and give it to me in the back seat and say, there you go, do a squiggle. And it's funny that, you know, it didn't have to be on TV for the idea, the name, the concept to be passed on, passed down.
So you having this exhibition, I mean, this is, and plus, I suppose, your work, you know, it's coming out of this legacy as well, but it will, you know, lead on to more Mr. Squiggle moments for people. And Rebecca, you've said that after your dad died, you were often asked to give talks and you come away from those feeling, you know, sad. This one,
it's not like that at all here, because I think when you walk in, he's there. His DNA is in every line of every drawing and every stroke in the way a puppet is built. And I also think that the people at the museum, their joy in what they do and their approach to the items that they look after, their interest, and it really makes it lovely. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel that sadness, you know. It's, yeah, very different, which is lovely.
You followed on from Miss Pat?
No.
They put me straight. You go. You answered the question.
So there was Miss Gina, then there was Miss Pat, okay, and then there was Miss Sue for a moment. Then there was Miss Jane, then there was Roxanne, and then there was me.
And what was it like working?
Oh, it was great fun. My father was actually really fun to work with, and I know I'm biased, but he actually was, and I really enjoyed it. And we had a great repartee, and so it was fun
because that. You had to be on Mr. Squiggle's wavelength, didn't you? Yeah. There was a lot of unscripted.
The most fun was when you actually do the squiggles, because that wasn't scripted. Every now and again he would say, just make sure you ask what that ball is, because he'd have something that he wanted to, you know, talk about that particular, you know, why there was a yo-yo on the end of the elephant's trunk, because there was a story about the yo-yo. But apart from those little pointers, it was completely ad-libbed, and it was a lot of fun.
You did get told off once for doing...
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's the squiggles. I think the squiggles in there on Yes, it was in Hyde Park. It was one of the first times I had actually seen a live show, and it was quite a big thing to take shows from on air to a live audience. And so Squiggle with Miss Pat was one of those. And so I got to do a squiggle. I was only about 7 or something like that. And I did this squiggle and I went like that. Afterwards, he did say, "What was that scribble you did on that? What did you think I was giving that?"
But it's here in the exhibition.
It is. And it's a great squiggle.
The most common question is, how did he do the drawings?
As Normie would say, with great difficulty. Yes. And, you know, after 40 years, you get quite good at doing things.
Is this a quote from Norman or is it from you? "A perfect combination of a clever idea and a person with specific cartooning skills and a wild imagination."
That's how I sum it up. I really think that's the case. And he grew more practiced at that and grew more like Mr. Squiggle as time went on and more embedded in the character, I think, as time went on.
And I'm going to ask Danielle, I mean, what are your thoughts as a curator about why Mr. Squiggle and Norman Hetherington's puppets and performance had such enduring appeal? 40 years.
Yeah, he's just such a fond part of our childhood, and everyone loves to reflect on those lovely moments of your childhood. But I feel the concept of Mrs. Squiggle and squiggling, it's such a simple one, and anyone can connect with it no matter what your age is. If you watched it on television as a child or you come into the museum and you see it here, I think it's just got universal appeal, and that's what makes it so enduring.
Yeah, I've been studying his face, and I think you've nailed it, Rebecca, in his Mr. Squiggle. It's a sweetness.
He is really sweet, and he's very attractive. You know, I look at him and I think there's just, like, I think he really is very engaging in those eyes. You just, yeah. I mean, speaking of someone who sort of stood next to him and did those squiggles, you know, he turns and looks at you and you just, you're quite mesmerised.
There's not a hard edge about him. He's soft, you know, soft hair, soft features. Yeah, yeah, he's just a soft and gentle character. And I think that was, well, when it was coming about, he did feel that there was too many mean, naughty characters for the kids on TV, and there wasn't enough gentle, soft.
Blackboard was as tough as it got.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
And I have said this before, but Blackboard was misunderstood. Because he was a performer at heart, and he often, you may not have heard, you know, "Oh, is it time for my song and dance?" when the squiggle had come off. And he wouldn't get a chance because on would go another squiggle. So he was really a frustrated performer. And he was waiting for the, you know, the light to shine and for him to have his moment. And it just didn't come about. So I think people should be very gentle and sympathetic to Blackboard's
plight. I hovered over the hurry up T-shirt. I'm going back. Yeah. I'm going back. Tom, your mum says too that she felt every time she dropped you and Harry off to, you know, be looked after by your grandparents, job done. The happiest place in the world, was it?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because if, you know, if there wasn't the studio, then there was the beautiful garden that we could go and play in. And but the studio, especially as a creative space, just the options were limitless. You could do anything in there. We could pull out a pill doctor and a dragon, and we'd be playing for hours. And yeah, I'm sorry. I know there were toys for us, but not for you.
I couldn't believe it. No, I'd look and I'd go, "Oh, really? You were allowed to play with that? Oh, okay." Things that I would never have played with or touched when I was a child.
Mm-hmm. Grandparents go quite dotty.
Oh, I know. And they weren't tools of the trade. You know, they weren't the work tools anymore. They were just beautiful things in the studio that, yes, the boys were allowed to play with.
And I think similar ways to what you were saying before, for an artist, I think having so many different ways that you can be creative is such a blessing. It makes complete sense to me that he wrote, he painted, he drew, he created puppets, he manipulated the puppets. It makes so much sense to me.
He was the kind of the triple threat, you know, like he really could do everything from start to finish.
Tell me about Miss Pat. We've just had a story from my husband how he got a signed letter back and he was in love with her, deeply in love with her. And I think there's probably quite a few people in the audience that... But tell us about Pat Lovell.
Well, she was... Dad really enjoyed working with Pat. She was had multiple television jobs that she was juggling and racing in to do Mr. Squiggle.
But the bit about I loved with Pat Lovell, Miss Pat, with Rocket, with the steam going up. That was initially talcum powder.
It was talcum powder because talcum powder was beautifully fine and would create lovely puffs of billowing steam for both Rocket and Bill. But then there was some sort of stories around that talcum powder was in fact carcinogenic. So Pat took Norman aside and stood up for her performing rights. And so he had to find something else, which he settled on corn flour, which he wasn't as happy about because corn flour does clump a bit.
Rocket wasn't taking off.
No, in a cloud of beautiful talcum powder. And he was like, you're really... everyone should suffer for their art. What is her problem? He would say these things as a joke, but, you know, maybe underneath he was a little bit, you know, serious.
You, Miss Jane, was another favourite for you. Tell us about Jane.
Oh, I loved Miss Jane because she was sort of my, well, she was my era because we didn't actually own a television in Miss Pat's era. So then we had a television so I could actually see Mr. Swiggle. And also by that time I was going with Dad to work as often as I could. And so I got to know her, and she is just a lovely, fun person. And Dad really enjoyed working with her as well. And she loved Mr. Squiggles.
Yeah, that's fantastic. This has been a joy and a delight. Thank you so much for, well, Rebecca, for you, for all that work in, you know, as Thomas acknowledged to me before, he did leave the archive for Mum to deal with. Yes. But Rebecca, and I think, as the audience have said, of sharing these incredibly personal family stories and delight. Thank you so much. I think you've lifted us all up. Thomas, I look forward to all your work and coming to your shows. I hope to be, you know, there on the list.
Thank you.
And Danielle, thanks for your beautiful and obviously your amazing relationship you've formed with the family as well. So please thank Rebecca Hetherington, Thomas Hetherington Welsh and Danielle Kassar. Enjoy the exhibition, everyone. And thank you so much for coming and for loving Squiggle. Thanks so much.